Welcome to Cultivate the Ordinary Podcast, curious conversations for the anxious, frustrated, dejected, and bored. I'm Travis.
And I'm Jesse. So often we're held captive by screens, schedules, and media that's mind-numbing and polarizing. This leaves us seeing dimly through a fog. We want to spark more imagination and a better awareness of God's presence in the everyday.
Join us on a fun journey of discovery and curiosity as we look at the ordinary through the lenses of joy, wonder, beauty, and hope.
May this poem be my bubbles popping. Be a gentle reminder that there is still life in these lungs, that my dreams are still floating. That my brilliance is still buoyantly beautiful, that I don't need fins to find freedom, that I can feel that same rest and peace from all those years ago without having to rest in peace to get there. May this poem be a backstroke into battle, be a deep dive out of depression, be the exhale my survival tactics needed. May this poem rescue me from myself.
Welcome to the podcast today. We are really excited to have our friend San Dove on. We're going to be talking about poetry, the creative process, writing, inspiration, kind of themes that come along with that when it comes to her craft. She does spoken word poetry, and we're going to talk also some about that. So before we get more into this podcast and the topic, would you like to intro our guest more, Jess?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited to have you here today, San.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here. This is really cool.
Yeah. We've wanted to just hear more about your poetry for a long time. I've heard a few performances, and we really just see you as just a person just full of just grace and strength. Mm-hmm. And I love your perspective on things and the way you speak about life and faith and beauty from ashes, mm-hmm. and just the depth that you go to with the things you share with the world.
I appreciate that. No, it is an honor and a privilege to be able to do that, because at one point I wasn't going to, so it's just beautiful to see how God can bring us, how far he can bring us our artistry. So
yeah, I love that. Well, before we get further in here, tell us more about yourself, your husband, anything else you wanted to let us know about.
Oh, okay. Well, I am San, the poet, aka San Dove, recently married. Met my husband doing poetry at a poetry slam, which is basically competition for poetry. And it has just been such a beautiful, beautiful journey to see how God moves in our work and how he can reveal things to ourselves through our words, right? Mm. And I think that's later on we can get more into that, but that's definitely healing for me in a lot of ways.
I love that.
So I do poetry. I write about injustices. I write about love. I write about God, my faith, definitely testimony driven, struggles of motherhood, you name it, anything that I deal with usually comes out through my poetry. So that's just a bit about me. Mm. Yeah.
Sounds like you're kind of just working out life.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Aren't we all?
Yeah,
poetry definitely helps me get more introspective viewpoints on myself. And so sometimes when I'm writing something, it's like my hand will move before, my heart does. It's like, okay, this is what we're feeling. And I'm like, oh, and I read it back and I'm like, I didn't even know I was feeling that. So in a lot of ways, it's definitely helped me on this journey. Because, we're all just trying to make it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So I'm just curious, back to meeting Dove, your husband, at the poetry slam.
Yes.
Was there any other thing that went along with that? Like, was there a performance that led to, or is it just being there together?
Well, no. What happened was, so there's a venue, Coffee Underground. It's run by Wits and Poetry. And we would have like open mic every Sunday, and he wasn't at the open mics at the time because it was football season, which I later realized he is a big Eagles fan. Go Birds. And
Boo.
So
Vikings here. So.
Oh, okay. I see. And so I would always like go to the open mics, which is just, free mic. You just get up, you can read, you can speak as long, usually it's 5 minutes because there are people on the list, but, they would, once a month, they would have a poetry slam. Down at Radio Room, and he was always there and he was always recording in the front. Then he'd get up, like swiftly change, run up on stage, do a poem, then he'd win. And then he'd pack up his stuff and go home. And I was like, who is this man? Like, who is this man coming in here that I only see once a month, you know? But his poetry stuck out to me because I don't curse in my poetry. No judgment to those who do. Right. That's just not my ministry. And I noticed that he didn't either. But I also noticed that there was just a certain gentleness in the undertones of his pieces that I resonated with. And I'm like, I know that. And that's giving Jesus. It's giving. There's a piece there that I can't, you know, pinpoint, but it just feels so familiar. And some time went on, I got to know him a little bit vicariously through others. But I ended up visiting his church. I had moved up to the upstate and I didn't have a church family yet. And they welcomed me there. And so I went as a friend, you know. Had a past of love that was just kind of rocky, and so I wasn't looking for more love, and neither was he, but God just met us there, and so we just blossomed into a beautiful relationship, poetry and love and all the things, and got married. So that is where we are now, and it's been really beautiful. It's been really beautiful.
Oh, I love that so much.
Yeah.
Well, tell us, so for people that don't sort of know much of the genre or aren't familiar with the art of spoken word.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit more about that. What is that? What's it like? And yeah, bring us in.
So spoken word is, it's not so much structured by just rhyme scheme, right? So you think of it more as a rhythm when you're speaking. For me, I'm a lover of music. And so it was easy for me to resonate with spoken word because there's kind of like a silent rhythm behind the way the cadence and the delivery. It usually is verbally spoken, it's poetry, but it's sometimes it can come off more as a conversation. Sometimes there can be more of a rhythm of a, you know, ebb and flow of how it goes, and it's up and down, and it invites the people, but it's more engaging. It kind of personifies poetry in a way that where, you know, people can relate to it a bit easier in certain ways. But sometimes the downside of that is when you're trying to put it into writing. And so people can't always hear how it's supposed to be performed, right? And it does sound different when it's performed live versus on the page. And so I enjoy it because I feel like it's more personable. I feel like people can hear my heart better, and I can see the people and see how they respond. And, you know, you can feel the energy in the room and just relate to people. But yeah, spoken word, it's usually spoken. It's a form of poetry that has more of a rhythm. Sometimes it can rhyme, sometimes it doesn't. Or if it does rhyme, it can be in very different spaces. It doesn't really so much have a specified rhyme scheme. And it's just really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I love two things that I love about it. Also, you know, I'm a writer, but the idea, writing is so lonely. And a lot of times you just never know what people thought of something or what the response was. Yep. You know, maybe it was inspiring to them. Maybe they hated it. Maybe you just don't know. But with that venue to be able to both really showcase your words, but in a way that you actually have an audience presence, like it kind of marries right, you know, kind of there's a lot like songwriting then.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that. I think, and that's why that's also a thing. Like if you're performing and the room isn't as full, it can be harder to perform.
Yeah.
Because you're like, okay. And my husband, he always says 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000, we perform the same. Which I agree with. I'm like, when you get up there, if someone showed up, that's still someone, and that someone is still very important. So we're going to give them the same energy. And I think it's important to just kind of tap in with yourself before you enter the stage, like center yourself and be okay. I always have a mantra that I say that's scripture. But just to center myself and remember why I wrote it and remember who I'm performing it for. Right. So yeah, it definitely helps it not be as lonely to be able to share your words with people, especially, if they resonate with it. And I'm sure, like, I haven't written a book. You've written books, which I aim to do one day. But I think that being able to feel heard and seen on those stages does help me too.
And in a way, it's like the audience is a little bit of the creative art itself, because I imagine there's a way that it's sort of a living, moving, breathing experience to where like I'm sure like your inflection or your energy or your like even your demeanor of delivery might change based on how the audience is that?
Oh no, that's real. Mirroring a little bit of that? No, absolutely. Not to cut you off.
No, please cut me off.
No. I think that like when I was speaking earlier about energy, like you can feel crowd participation. And so like, you know, if anybody, whether it's any performance, spoken word or singing or any other, you know what I'm saying, type of artistry, if the crowd is quiet and not responsive, that can affect your confidence on stage, especially if you can see the faces. Like, wow, this is a tough crowd. So it definitely, the venue, the people that show up, that can also affect your performance. For me, I try for it not to, but it can be more difficult at times, depending on if you have more of a shy crowd. Some people are just more outgoing than others, and that's okay.
Right.
But it can make it a little bit more difficult to be like, okay, whoa, this is a tough crowd. I still got to give the energy. I still got to show up. So, it is more of a creative process. You never know what kind of performance you're going to give and what kind of crowd you're going to get. So,
Well, you know, when you talk about the creative process, and like you mentioned, you share a lot about difficulties and struggles and, you know, emotions and I heard it said recently that emotion is like, it's almost like energy in motion, right? Mm-hmm. You have these thoughts and then they turn it, you feel them in your body, obviously.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about with your creative process for writing, that's an experience of an isolated creative process, but then it turns into a shared creative process. Mm-hmm. Can you take us through both of those things individually and then the creative side of the, you know, the performance?
Absolutely. So whenever I this question arises, it can always be a little bit more difficult. But over the years, I've realized with my creative process specifically, there really isn't one. I think that's the beauty in it. I'm definitely driven by experience, and sometimes it can feel more spontaneous. And it's in those moments where I feel like God meets me, right? Mm-hmm. And so with whether it be injustices or something that's happening, I feel like some of my best poems that I've ever written were when I was at my lowest points. Mm-hmm. Probably moments that I wasn't really thinking about writing, and my heart just still needed to speak. And I needed to listen to it, right? Mm-hmm. And so in those moments, I'm like, okay, let me just see what I'm writing. And there have been so many times, like I was speaking on before, where I've written something and I didn't even know where it was going. It was just like, I feel like I have to write about this, and what do I want to say? And when I'm done writing, I'll read back and I'm like, I didn't even know I was feeling this way. Mm. It's almost like a revelation in a weird way, right? And so when I transform that, because that's a very sacred space to have. Mm. Especially for me in my writing, because I always, like I said, I feel like God always meets me there and he's very gracious that way with me. But when I transform it and bring it to stage, there's like my inner child, I think, finds healing too in some ways, depending on the topics. Because as a young girl, I was not bold as far as verbally, right? I was always really protective of like family and all these things. I was always super feisty. But as far as stage presence and like getting up on stages, that wasn't a strong suit for me. And so as I'm older now and I'm doing this poetry thing and I'm on stages, showing up in those spaces in public and speaking my truth is like healing for my inner child to see like me show up for us in public. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's been really healing and really therapeutic and really full circle to be like, you're deserving to be up here and your words matter and someone needs to hear this. And so like, keep going. And so it's sacred there too then. It doesn't feel like I'm losing anything. Yeah. If anything, it feels like it's growing, it's magnifying. Right. And that is also the reward I never asked for, right?
Yeah.
But God still gave it to me. So it's just really beautiful to be able to share testimony and just let God do the rest.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, even if it affects one person, that's still a job well done for me. Mm. In a crowd full of 100 people, 99 people could be like, that didn't really resonate. But that one person, even if they tell me or not, to be like, hey, no, like I needed to hear that. And thank you, because I didn't have the strength or the boldness yet to get up there, but you did. Mm-hmm. And like, I needed to see somebody do that to then encourage me to do that. Right.
Right.
And so it's just been really beautiful to see how the creative process in private can transform into something so beautiful and so well-rounded and just surpass any expectation I ever had for the piece. Because then it's no longer just mine. right?
Yeah.
It's like out there in the world now, and it's up to your interpretation and how it affects you and your reality. Yeah. And so it's really cool to see how it can just transform that way.
Yeah. I think what you're talking about really showcases the power of vulnerability.
Oh, absolutely. And... No, I think speaking on vulnerability, I did a show, the show that my husband actually proposed to me. It was our first joint show for Intentional Inc., which is a nonprofit that we're building right now. And on stage, I was telling them that I was really afraid to like get up there and share some of the poems that I had written for it because it was so vulnerable. And I kept hearing like fear, 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 like the enemy was just trying to lie to me throughout that process. And then God was like turning that word into freedom. And I was like, there is freedom in vulnerability. There's freedom in being able to say this thing no longer has resonance in my body. And I'm releasing that and I'm letting that go. And it was so beautiful and so rewarding for me to get up there and be like, wow, this no longer is just a part of me. I'm not tacking this onto me anymore. And how liberating that is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there is freedom in vulnerability. I 100% agree with that. I think that vulnerability is necessary. And it can seem scary, but it's so worthwhile in the end. Mm-hmm. So worthwhile.
It's like what you're saying is vulnerability is release.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. That sounds, yes. Okay, poet, yes.
Jess has some poetry.
Yes, she is. Yeah, yes, she is.
She's written some stuff.
Yes, she has. Mm-hmm.
All right, so I told San before she comes on, I mean, you got to expect at least one curveball in this podcast. Just reacting to something, or I'm a quote guy, I'm
there
full of quotes, so I'm going to throw out a curveball here.
Okay.
But the great American writer, poet, Robert Frost, considered by many to be the greatest American poet of the 21st century, has a line I want you to react to and see if what this triggers in you as a response, kind of about creativity and just where your heart comes in the writing.
Mm.
But he says that a poem begins with a lump in the throat, a homesickness or lovesickness. It is reaching out toward expression, an effort to find fulfillment. A complete poem is one where an emotion has found its thought and the thought has found words.
Mm. Now that's... That is quite the quote. I think that is beautifully said. There have been a lot of times where I'm like I was saying before, I don't really have a creative process, but I always know when it's time to write a poem. It's like the voice of the heart, right? The heart can't speak what the mouth does. The mouth speaks what the heart's feeling. And so that lump in the throat, I resonate with that many a time. I feel like there, as I'm growing in my walk with Christ, there have been so many times where he's silenced me verbally, like, hey, don't speak on that yet. That thought isn't yet complete. And I never want to do damage with incomplete thoughts and just putting those into words for other people. But with poetry, it's like, you know, this is what I'm feeling and it's kind of sitting here, but what do I want to say? What does it want to say? And once you can fully get that to marry the thought of like emotions and you craft it all together, it does become a poem. It does become a well-rounded thought, something that's more digestible, something that is a conceived thought and someone can like understand where you're coming from and feel where you're coming from. There have been times where I've tried to write prematurely on a premature lump in my throat, and you can tell the vast difference in between the two. You can. You can tell like this poem has something, but it's not ready.
It's not ready yet.
It's not ready. And so no, I definitely resonate with that, with that quote.
No, I love that. Really? Yeah. Thanks for responding to that. You are really creative in so many ways, and you've already alluded to this throughout already, but anything else you want to add about what it is specifically about words that come to life for you?
So as a child, whenever there was conflict, I would always write a letter, right? I was never the one to be like, at least not as a child, I was not the one to be rah-rah and yelling at people. I was like, you know, I'm going to write a letter and I'm going to let you know exactly how I feel. And like clockwork, and I'm talking, I was young, maybe like 6 or 7. And I write these letters and people come back either crying or like, what in the world? Like, and that's when I started to realize words really do have power, even at such a young age. And I was like, wow. But with that, I had to be careful. Like, words really do have power. And there's life and death in the tongue. What I'm speaking in these letters has a voice too. And so as I get older, I realize that in all of my poems, I don't ever want to leave anybody with anything negative. Even if I start a poem with something that is heavy or traumatic, I always want to end with a testimony or with a map to a resolve or something, even if the resolution isn't yet there, right? But I'm like, no, I want to be able to leave somebody with encouragement, because this world is hard that we live in. It's not easy, and we all walk different paths, but we're all human, and we're all sharing this world, and all of our voices are vital and important and integral and necessary. And so for me, words, I think, they contain a lot of power. And because I know that, I'm very cautious in how I use them now. God has really just kind of honed that in on me. Like, be careful of what you're writing and what you're leaving with people, because people take these words.
Yeah.
How are they feeling? Are they feeling drained after your poems? Are they feeling encouraged? Are they feeling hopeful? Are they feeling like they've learned something? What are they taking away from your work? And so words contain so much power. And if there's anything I can preach, it would be that for sure. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love hearing how you were as a small child, like, and learning to use your words. Mm-hmm. Fast forward a little bit, when you really discovered spoken word.
Yeah.
Do you remember your first spoken word poem?
I do, actually. I was attending a church in Columbia. It was Christian Life, Assemblies of God Church. And we did this thing called, it was fine arts. And you would compete at a district's level. And then if you did superior, you would advance to a national level. And so it was like Disney World and all these other places during the summer for a week. And I was in Kappa Tau, which was the collegiate bracket. And it was my last year before I aged out, and I had never performed anything. And they had a segment for spoken word, and I had never written a spoken word piece. And I was like, man, like, I kind of feel like I could do this. Like, I love words. I've always loved poetry and English class and all these things. And like, what I want to talk about. And I was talking about the American church. It was a poem that I wrote that is hidden on YouTube somewhere in the archives. And any poet will tell you, like, hearing back their first poem, it's like cringe, right? You're like, oh my gosh, no, I would never do that now. But I think it's a testament to show how far I've come. But no, I do remember that piece, and I wrote it, and I was just talking about parallels with the American church and the church out, you know, in different countries, and like where our focus is. And it was like, it caught everybody off guard. They're like, what are you doing? Like, where did this come from? And I surprised myself. I'm like, I don't know. I didn't think it was good. I was just writing. I don't know. But that really ignited a spark in me to start spoken word poetry.
All right. And you have alluded a little to this about, you know, kind of writing around injustice and that kind of thing. But specifically with anger and how you've experienced injustice or seen injustice play out, how does anger kind of, how has that worked out in your spoken word poetry? How do you kind of deal with that?
Yeah. No, thank you. That's a good question. I think that for me, I'm very cautious, right? Whenever, like I said, whenever I'm writing anything, but with anger specifically, it's like, if the piece needs to highlight the anger, then let the piece highlight the anger in a tactful way. Right? Because sometimes in my experience here, it can be easy to be written off as like angry Black woman or someone who's always angry, even if you have a reason to be. And so it's really important for me to be like, no, I am angry, and it's an emotion we can all feel. And this is why. And what do these words do? What will this poem do? Will there be change from this? With injustices specifically, especially with like Black and brown people in this country and other things that's happening, I think it's hard for me to put specific names in my poetry now, because I'm like, I'm tired of there always being another poem about another slain life. And what is this poem? You know, am I doing this for my own gratification to get authority at a slam? Am I doing this for followers? I have to check myself too, right? To make sure that I'm paying homage in the way that's necessary. And sometimes the people slain didn't ask to be martyrs. They didn't ask to be a movement. And sometimes that their death is sacred, and it's for the family. And so I'm very cautious on how I integrate that into my poetry. But no, if I'm angry about something, I want the anger to be visible, but I also want people to know that, like, I'm not catering to it. At the end of it, I'm searching for a solution. At the end of it, at the end of the poem, I want people to see, like, okay, she is angry, but justifiably. And what are we as the consumers of this poem going to do about this? If anything, right? The goal is, you know, for it to invoke some sort of conversation, for it to plant some sort of a seed as like, you know, this could be in our backyard. Even if I don't look like these people, I have friends who do, or I have people, I encounter them, and it's more unity driven.
Right.
I don't want my poems to be divisive. division hasn't resulted in any real change thus far, and I don't think it ever will. Mm-hmm. And so I think unity, love, and exception, and grace, all of these qualities help us as a people to see each other as people. Mm. And so, no, when it comes to anger, you know, I know anger too well. And I used to be a slave to it. Uh-huh. I used to be, you know, angry all the time. That was my resting zone. Uh-huh. And I was not the best person for it. I was not the best mother for it. I was not the best friend for it. And God has brought me out of that space, and so now I can recognize it. And so as I'm leaving people with words that have power and with poems, I'm very cautious to not just leave them with anger. Like, you can recognize that I was, or I am angry, but I don't want to stay angry. Mm-hmm. And so, like, what does that look like? So I don't know that. The question, but yeah
I really, really love that answer. Really honest. Yep. And just really made me think, and I think, like, I love what you've said so far too, just about, you know, about how words matter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and really we're all given gifts. You have this phenomenal gift of writing and performing it, and so you're more keenly aware, it sounds like, as you've gotten mature and through the years, mm-hmm. and what God's done in you of sort of the cautionary mm-hmm. tale around it, of like, you can use this gift in ways to really inspire, mm-hmm. and but also, like, empower, mm-hmm. Be honest, defend people that need defending. I mean, mm-hmm. there's kind of that sensitivity towards walking the line and all that stuff too, where right. yep. And how you're talking about, like, not just the temptation to, like, be even more relevant because it comes on the heels of, you know, another slain victim mm-hmm. in the black community and, right. and all of that kind of stuff. So I love that sensitivity towards all of that. It also mm-hmm. made me think about what you said about anger and divisiveness mm-hmm. and how easy it is for us to be angry. I'm right. angry a lot. You and I can, like, yeah. And yeah. But it almost seems to me like what you said about unity, though, and mm-hmm. anger, it mm-hmm. seems like those are two different tracks. Like, unity is coming together, and mm-hmm. often the outcome of anger in situations is to split. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm angry,
yeah.
you know, whether it's unjustly or whatever, either mm-hmm. way, like, I, that effect, like mm-hmm. with it's my kids or whatever, there's a splitting, there's a mm-hmm. sending away, I have to come back and repair. Mm-hmm. So it just made me really try to think of, like, when you talk about anger
yeah.
as because it's not all bad.
It's
anger,
not.
Right, right.
Righteous
so
anger,
righteous
yeah.
anger, mm-hmm. and it can be a tool. Mm-hmm. It can be so, but to then promote unity through that, and
yes.
how you have to really creatively be stretched, if
oh,
that
absolutely.
Makes any sense. Like,
yes. I think you're right there on the money. I think that sometimes people, the issue is that we don't all see each other as human, right? Mm. We see each other as, you know, what we identify as, what our lifestyles are, and we paint that as the narrative over this person, when the truth is we're all human living in a human experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so on top of that, just to go a little bit deeper, when you think about anger, we all can experience anger. And then the question isn't, oh, she's angry. It's, or the statement isn't, oh, she's angry or he's angry. It's, why are you angry?
Mm-hmm.
And what do I need to do to help you not feel angry? Am I contributing to this anger, right? And that can be on across all scopes, all demographics, across the country, across the world. Mm-hmm. And once we gain a deeper understanding, you know, be a little bit more selfless in that and say, look, I want to grow my perspective of you. I don't want to cancel you if you oppose my viewpoint. I want to understand why you have that viewpoint. I want to understand what your experience is, because clearly I don't. And it's important for me to learn from someone who's been there.
Mm-hmm.
And that can go on either, like I said, that can go across all boards. And mm-hmm. once we're able to do that and see, like, okay, you're angry and I'm angry with you because this isn't right.
Mm. Right.
There's unity in that.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. Yeah. And that's what I aim for here. I think it's possible. It's difficult. It may not look like it's possible, but I think it's definitely possible.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. When you describe unity mm-hmm. in anger, I think about when I, like, work with women and clients and stuff like that mm-hmm. on emotional regulation.
Yeah.
And that anger can be destructive and divisive, like you said, mm-hmm. if it's dysregulated anger.
Mm-hmm.
But when you still have emotion, the emotion of anger, but
right.
you regulate your system to be in self-control. And there's a number of ways to do that. But for you, it sounds like writing sorts out the angry thoughts, the dysregulation, and you become clear and focused.
It definitely does help. I think I treat writing how I think I treat writing with my anger as I do in person. And what that means for me is, like, if I have a disagreement with my husband, I don't speak to him when I'm angry because I know how much damage I can do with my words when I'm angry. Yeah. And I've done that and I've been there, and it's hard to navigate out of that space. And so for him, he's like, I want the resolution right now. I'm like, but you're not going to get that from me right now this way. Right. Right? Yeah. I need to go sit and simmer and process and filter through. Pause and reflect and let the truth of what I'm really feeling come out.
Do you have a course available on this that you can offer for our listeners, but mostly for me?
Yeah, it's called Jesus. It's definitely not me. But I do the same thing with my writing. I'm like, okay, this thing's happened, this whatever is, and I'm angry and I don't like it and I want to write about it. And so sometimes there's one, two, or three takes of the same poem. The first one will have all the things, all the things that I'm not going to leave people with, right? That's just for me to, like, reflect and say, okay, now what am I filtering from this? What does this look like? And then there's a second version, and then so on and so on. How many ever it takes, right, sometimes to get to the version that I deem acceptable to share with the world, for my point to still be conveyed well, but also the essence of the poem is not lost.
And I think, too, about you shared a powerful poem with us that made me think about breath and breathing and that process of just kind of getting clear, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to share with us a little bit about your poem titled Drowning?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So Drowning, funny story, I was on the way to a slam when I wrote this piece, and I'm notorious, which I don't recommend, for writing pieces on the way to slams and then somehow still doing seemingly well. I did not win. No, I made it around two, and then I phased out after that. But I was in a really dark place. Depression was something, and I say was because I don't want to keep speaking that over myself, right? Because words have power, y'all. And it's something that I struggled with a lot. And it comes out in spurts and never really gave me a heads up. And so during this specific season, I felt like I just couldn't catch a break. I just couldn't catch a breath. And we were on the way to the slam, and I was feeling severely overwhelmed. And I'm just like, I don't even want to slam right now, but I'm a woman of my word, and I told them that I would. So I'm going to. People showed up, you know, like, I'm going to deliver, but this is just where I am today, and I pray they meet me where I am. And so as I was writing Drowning, it was basically a piece that was highlighting the feeling of drowning, but the beauty in being able to catch a breath and what that feels like, and putting emotion behind that, and how it's going to be okay, even if there are days where you feel like you're just consumed and overwhelmed. And that's really what the essence of it is to keep going, and that things get better. They do get better, even if they don't feel like they will. They do get better. And so I don't know, a lot of people can resonate with that in this country, I'm sure. And so I was like, I just want to write this for the people, hear my heart. This is where I am. And then I was met with so much grace that day. So many people were like, oh my gosh, like, I see you, and like, it's okay. And I was like, and I appreciate that, because at the end of the day, it's really just words from the heart. That's what it means. So
I love it.
So you're going to do a live performance of this on the podcast.
Right? I am going to do a live performance. I
love this.
I feel like life has had me in a chokehold these last few weeks, and I've been gasping for air ever since. Have you ever felt like you were drowning while breathing? When I was younger, I used to go swimming a lot. And my brother taught me this trick where we would blow out all of the air in our lungs and just drift to the bottom of the pool. And I remember looking up and seeing the sun reflect off the water, thinking just how beautiful it was. It captivated me so much that I no longer had a fear of running out of breath. As if Poseidon loaned me his own lungs on layaway, I would lay there anyway, with my fears dying beautifully and quietly, just a few feet below the surface, alone with my thoughts and a lung capacity too restrictive for me to feel invincible. Last year, it was the first time that I've thought about this memory since childhood. And I think that maybe it's because I never stopped holding my breath, because I feared that what would happen when I come up for air, that my fins would transform into shackled feet, tethered to unobtainable dreams, and a heartbeat reminding me just how far I am from the finish line. I feel like I've been drowning on loop.
like I've been laying at the bottom so long the darkness is drowning out the view and it's no longer beautiful. I told Poseidon he could have his lungs back, that the only time black girls thrive in water are in Disney movies, and even that has a time limit. I wish I could go back and find that girl at the bottom of the pool all those years ago and ask her how she did it, how she could take her brother's instructions so freely and see the drifting as being grounded and not sinking. Ask her how she was able to keep her dreams buoyant from the bottom, or how she could fill her head with brilliance instead of the water that embraced her so eagerly. See, I no longer like this feeling. I fear my dreams are drowning now, quietly, just a few feet below the surface, begging me to just take a second and come up for air, confused as to why I act like I don't want them to be alive anymore. What sound do you hear when someone is screaming underwater? Does anyone remember that someone is sinking in the first place, or were there bubbles? Just a gentle reminder that there is still life in those lungs. May this poem be my bubbles popping. Be a gentle reminder that there is still life in these lungs, that my dreams are still floating, that my brilliance is still buoyantly beautiful, that I don't need fins to find freedom, that I can feel that same rest and peace from all those years ago without having to rest in peace to get there. May this poem be a backstroke into battle, be a deep dive out of depression, be the exhale my survival tactics needed. May this poem rescue me from myself. Tell my brother I didn't mean to stay down there so long, that I was just playing, that I plan to float back to the top someday, that I'm okay. The view from up here is much more beautiful now, that the depression didn't drown me, that I probably won't play that game anymore because I don't trust myself not to hug the water back next time, because today I'm still breathing and the pressure didn't kill me, so now I can finally. Thank you.
Wow. It's very emotional.
Yes, that piece was, it was definitely from the heart that day. It came in like 15 minutes, if you can believe it. And I was like, I need to get this out because this is really how I'm feeling. And, you know, my husband, he wasn't my husband then, but he heard it and he was like, I didn't even know you were feeling this. You know, it was a testament to like how sometimes we can internalize things too. Yeah. And I'm working on that. Working on that. But no, I shared that day and I left it on stage. I'm like, do with that what you need to, because that's where I am today.
Well, I just, I've heard that before. Mm-hmm. Sitting here next to you in this little studio place,
yeah.
Like, it's like the palpable emotion. Like, I feel like I don't really have any words to really like no, respond okay. with. Of like, yeah. And I know you're not looking for that, but yeah. Just it's like. I felt like I was kind of in there somehow in this struggle myself,
I think what you're describing is empathy.
Empathy, yeah, yeah. Like that's yes. okay. You're helping me. I struggle with vulnerability, so I struggle with my even words.
What she was feeling.
Just And I think what for me the power of spoken word in this is that those words on paper, you know, would be. Would strike my heart in a way, but to hear your words, your tones, your heart, it's like it touches deep into my soul.
And you know, and I'm glad different. I'm not glad that you were probably experiencing those things, right, for anybody out there who is, but that it can be felt. And that just goes to show, even through podcasts and microphones and people who don't look like you, that you can still reach someone and connect with them. So yeah, words are definitely binding in a way, but in a beautiful way, they're also connecting. And so I'm grateful that you were able to hear me today.
And pain and suffering is universal. We all are wading in the waters of feeling like things are drowning us at times.
Absolutely.
And I think that's why it lands, it resonates, I think, for every person. Even if specifically depression wasn't something that they walked through, it could have been a different type of drowning.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Drowning from your own tears. There's a line by the novelist Paul Coelho who says, "Tears are words that need to be written." I feel like for you, too, like your mm-hmm. tears, the tears of others, you're writing even on behalf of others that, you know, if maybe a different context, different situation, but that's can beautiful. Hear that, yeah, and yeah. just really mm-hmm. resonate.
There was a piece I wrote once where I was talking about how sometimes, like, a prayer to God just looks like tears on a page. So I resonate with that. I think yeah. that's... It's like you don't even have the words right, but God knows words, you know, right. just to like on the other end of that. But
yeah, and that's why I think like when you, Jess and I talk about contemplative practices and mm-hmm. some of the best profound, most profound prayers are prayers of silence.
Oh, yes.
That you are there communing with God and he is mm-hmm. listening to your heart and you mm-hmm. don't maybe even have the words. And that may be one of the most holy prayers there are.
Yeah, it makes me think about when you said contemplative prayers. Like there's one of my favorite prayers by Father Thomas Keating that really embodies like what we're kind of talking about. It's called the Welcome Prayer. Mm. Can I share it real quick?
Absolutely.
Okay. So it just, I imagine myself like when I'm just trying to open myself up to maybe a hard day or a hard experience or something, just deep breath and like, I just like open up my hands and it's, welcome, welcome, welcome. I welcome everything that comes to me today because I know it is for my healing. I surrender wanting power and control. I surrender wanting affection and esteem. I surrender wanting to make myself secure. I open myself up to the love and the presence of God and the Holy Spirit's action within me. Amen. And just how we grasp at control, how we grasp at these things, but like how your faith intersects with these themes that we're talking about. It's just that opening and welcoming, going, I'm going to go through some stuff. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't say, yes, I want these things to happen, mm-hmm. like that type of welcome. Mm-hmm. But it says, I'm not trying to control it. I know God has, he's got his hand on this situation. And, and he wants to do something in me. He wants to create an action within me.
Definitely enjoyed that prayer. I think that it's important for us to trust God's will for what he has over us, but also to be receptive to what his will is for us. For me, sometimes my stubbornness can definitely get in the way of my healing. And so allowing ourselves to be open to what God's plan looks like, even if it contradicts our plan, I think that is very integral to the healing and understanding process.
Yeah, well said. Mm. So what do you tell the person that's just in the dark shadows of despair? There's someone who's just feeling they're grasping for hope, feeling that they can't even breathe.
Mm.
What is your message to them?
I would tell them to keep breathing. I would say that it's not an accident that they're still here. And as long as there's still breath in their lungs, they have purpose. Every day we wake up, somebody doesn't. And so if you woke up today, that means you still have a job to do. That means there's still a place for you here in this world on earth. And so I encourage you to just take it one breath at a time, one day at a time, 1 minute at a time. And just realize that your life is important, that your purpose is important. So, yeah.
I love that so much. And yeah. As long as you have breath in your lungs and, mm-hmm. you know, God is as near as our very breath. And,
yes.
And I love that reminder.
Absolutely.
So we want to hear more of your poetry. Can you tell us like how listeners might be able to find more of what you're putting out there?
Yeah, absolutely. So as of right now, I'm on Instagram. So you can find me on Sahn the Poet. That's S-A-H-N the Poet. On Instagram, my email is the same, just @gmail.com. I do have a website that's is being revamped right now, but when it comes back, I guess one could assume what that would also be.
Yeah.
As far as upcoming things, you know, my husband and I, Dove Dupree, we are working on building a nonprofit called Intentional Inc. And it's just a platform to be able to have a space for people to speak on their testimonies and their traumas and have a voice in the world that's positive, just to have a positive influence, you know, and being very intentional with the words we leave people with. Yeah. And so that is also be on the lookout, Intentional Inc. Official on Instagram. Follow us and just be in the know. But you can catch me live. Most of my work is done. in person. But I do have some poems definitely on my Instagram as well.
Mm. Very cool. And we will share links to this in the show notes. You can check that out.
Mm-hmm. And then we'd love for you to take us out with a poem.
Yes.
Titled, it's about joy, right?
Yes. Yeah, so I wrote this piece. I'm going to preface it because it might be kind of weird to like try and understand it. So in this piece, I personified, it's called Black Boy Joy. And I personified joy, right? Mm-hmm. And I set it up in this piece as like, what would it look like if joy were pursuing the black boy as much as he was pursuing joy, and what that could feel like? This piece was inspired by a dear friend of mine, more of a brother now, but he was going through a really tough spot with depression. And he was kind of stuck in it, you know? And I was like, what would it look like if he felt like he were being pursued, by joy? What would that feel like? And, you know, as a believer, I do believe that my joy comes from Jesus. And it's impenetrable and it's beautiful, but sometimes it's hard to get out of our own heads. Uh-huh. And so I'm going to share that, you know, just to take it out. And it's called Black Boy Joy. Sometimes Black Boy Joy hides in the ADD of his happiness. Makes him believe there's no real truth in trying a hoax. Like the real truth is only testament through dying, and even in death, he doesn't breathe. He doesn't rest. Just breaks back into the roots of bitter. He remolds himself a better version of broken, one that doesn't complain about not properly working, surviving slowly on recycled mustard seeds. But wait. So if the black boy joy looped on sporadic, if the sadness became the main narrator, how will he ever embody the full potential of his character? Of his brilliance? How would the joy trust the black boy enough to come out, to stay out, to trust him, to hold him holy and not fumble? How will the joy trust again? Trust the black boy enough for black boy to trust joy back? If black boy keeps secrets from himself, from his healing, from his health, how will black boy know that joy is looking for him, chasing towards him? Black boy has been running so long, the target seems to have been running with him, out of reach, out of time. But what if black boy runs towards joy, sees joy running toward him, folds into his own battered bear hug until he breaks brilliant, breaks down until the roots of depression have disintegrated into new soil, and even in death, he breathes new beginnings into the roots of beautiful, inhales the promises of 1,000 tomorrows. He doesn't rest until fruition tastes as addictive as depression did, waters every insecurity until leaves are strong enough to let the flowers bloom, until black boy realizes he has room for empty cocoons and butterflies that burst into freedoms. He lets his flowers bloom into joy again, into safety, into exhales. For the first time ever, black boy becomes joy, becomes the very thing he thought he wasn't strong enough to hold, to harness. Black boy smiles and means it, no longer feels caught between the quarrel of heart and hurt, hugs himself healed, and finally wills happiness to a stubborn stagnant, decimates all the hiding places, enjoys the silence. Black boy inhales promise and exhales persistence. He's free now. So that is that piece. I wrote it for him. I wanted him to feel like joy wasn't something that can be outside of us, that it's obtainable, that it's within us too, right? That we can hold on to it and it's tangible too. We can feel it in our body, in our bones. And I wanted him to not feel so isolated in that. So this goes out to you know, my black and brown brothers out there who may feel like they don't have a voice in this world, or they feel like they might be ridiculed for being honest about their emotions, or being seen as a simp, or whatever the adjectives and the words are these days, that there's space for you. There's space for you to have joy. There's space for you to feel. There's space for you to be human. So that's
all. We just love the creating space, like just that message is so good. I mean, we have two boys with brown skin ourselves.
Yes,
and it's just my heart.
Yeah.
My heart.
Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you for having me. This has been beautiful. Thank you.
It's been a gift for us. And yeah, I just love so many thought-provoking things, so many inspiring things and lines and things to go back and listen to. This is a podcast, I know for me, I would have to listen to multiple times, I think, just to really take it all in. So
same, likewise.
Yeah. So I'm going to end with an excerpt from the book Adorning the Dark, Thoughts on Community, Calling, and the Mystery of Making. The author, Andrew Peterson, who is a really talented musician, is a poet and has done some children's books as well. But in this particular book, he's really talking about just the creative process, you know, kind of back to that idea of imaging God through creativity, how worship is connected to our creative acts, and just kind of the mystery kind of at hand in making things. And so I really love that. I think it's also really fitting to kind of close with how I see Son, you know, seeing the gift of her words, the gift of her art as being something that's a gift she's offering the world. And in a way that Andrew Peterson would describe, sort of mending the world in at least your corner. So here's an excerpt from his book. He says, "I want you, dear reader, to remember that one holy way of mending the world is to sing, to write, to paint, to weave new worlds, because the seed of your feeble yet faithful work fell to the ground, died, and rose again. What Christ has done through you will call forth praise from lonesome travelers long after your name is forgotten. They will know someone lived and loved here. Whoever they were, they will think they belonged to God. It's clear that they believed the story of Jesus were true, and it gave them a hope that made their lives beautiful in ways that will unfold for ages among the linea that shimmers in the moonlit woods. This is why the enemy wants you to think you have no song to write, no story to tell, no painting to paint. He wants to quiet you. So sing. Let the word by which the Creator made you fill your imagination, guide your pen, lead you from note to note until a melody is strung together like a glimmering constellation in the clear sky. Love the Lord your God and love your neighbor too, by making worlds and works of beauty that blanket the earth like flowers. Let your homesickness keep you always from spiritual slumber. Remember that it is in the fellowship of saints, of friends and family, that your gift will grow best and will find its best expression. And until the kingdom comes in its fullness, bend your will to the joyful, tearful telling that's coming. Write about that, and never stop." Thanks again for joining us on the podcast today. In the show notes, be sure to check out the links for Son, following her on socials, and where you can find her work. Have an awesome day.